All right, Chris.
Okay, so at Torah study, you were talking about how
last night was purple night.
Purple? Oh, yeah. No. I'm getting ready for Rosh Hashanah.
No, that was just a joke, because last night my family and others were wearing purple, so that's okay. I'm just teasing him.
So you were talking about how few people got into the land, how few people were with Noach out of all that. So I remembered in the Do You Believe teaching, you mentioned Luke 18, verse 8, where it says, when the Son of Adam comes, shall he find belief on the earth? As a question, kind of a rhetorical question. And I wanted to ask, because it's part of a parable, if verses 1 through 7 before verse 8 and also part of 8, what the context means, because he doesn't explain the parable.
Okay, you want the context for that whole verses 1 through 8? Is that what you said?
Yeah, just what it means. I guess what I mean, if there's a deeper meaning as far as the parable goes, because he talks about the judge and the woman and all that, which I've never actually studied or understood.
All right, well, look, the whole thing comes down to verse 7, where it says, and shall Elohim not do right by all means to his own chosen ones who are crying out day and night to him and being patient over him? In other words, they were having this problem, trusting that there is authority in adversity, there is authority when there are challenges, there is authority in judgment, and you have to trust the righteous judge. And he talks about the unrighteous judge, and he talks about the righteous judge. And so the parable is trying to say, look, you know, begins here, it says, in a certain city, okay, because actually he spoke a parable to them that they should always pray and not lose heart. So that's the context. Don't lose heart. And in a certain city, there was a certain judge, not fearing Elohim nor regarding man. And a widow was in that city, and she came to him saying, do right to me on my adversary. And he would not for a while, but afterward he said to him within himself, even if I do not fear Elohim nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I shall do right to her, lest by her continual coming she wears me out. And the master said, hear what the unrighteous judge said. Okay, shall Elohim not do right by all? In other words, this judge was only doing because he just didn't want to be pestered, not because it was right or wrong. He's saying, but you have, when you pray, and he says, pray and not lose heart. So he's not saying, look, you have to pray and pray and pray and keep pestering, thinking that's what's going to make Elohim do what you want, but pray with confidence that he hears you and he will respond appropriately because he is the righteous judge. And so it's about praying with the right mindset and heart in terms of belief. And then when this came out and it's finished, he says, and I say to you that he shall do right to them speedily, but when the Son of Adam comes, he shall find, you know, shall he find faith and belief in the earth? In other words, are you guys going to be praying, living, and doing all you're doing in a emunah state, trusting and believing that he is in charge, has everything under control, is a righteous judge, and everything will be done correctly, whether you like it or not or see it that way or not, it still will be right. Okay? And so he's saying, but do you believe that? Oh, no, but I want what I want it now. Well, you will reap what you sow, and so will they, just not necessarily on your timing. But you want to see that pound of flesh now. You want to see that judgment now. You don't trust him when you act that way. Do you trust him or not? All right. Pete?
This is what you just said is a great lead into to my issue. And you and I spoke about the evil teaching and the problem I have with that. We talked about that at Pesach. And you pretty much told me, yeah, you got a problem, but it's your problem. But what I've been struggling with, is there such a thing as a universal evil? That there is an act that is so bad that there is no way that you can ever perceive any good design behind it. And that's an important question for me, because my business, I deal with trying to seek justice for people who are victims of unspeakable things that have happened to them. And that's my job. I struggle with trying to understand that. And I think what's helped me a bit, and I'm interested to know if I'm on the right track here. I saw a rabbi address the question of why good things happen to bad, or why bad things happen to good people. And he talked in terms of when Moshe saw the burning bush, he was told to remove his sandals because he was on holy ground. And what Moshe saw was a bush that was on fire but not consumed. And he could not wrap his brain around that. It was something that didn't make sense to him, which I think is where I'm at with things that I see that I can't wrap my brain around, like what happened in Texas at the school. I can't wrap my brain around that. I also can't wrap my brain around people who will stand like I'm standing in front of you and talk about all the great things you've done for them, and then poof, they're gone. My brain can also not wrap my, I can't wrap my brain around that either.
Right.
And so I'm wondering if the way I'm supposed to address this is bitakon, is to just have trust that it's God at work. And it's not for me to understand that the answers will come later like they do in Yeshua's parables. We don't understand them right off the bat. It's not until he explains it later through words or action in our lives that we reach that understanding.
Yeah, okay, good question. And I would say that's more emunah than bitachon. Bitachon is more trust, like I trust you and you trust me, as opposed to emunah, do I trust that you have everything under control and that it's all going to work out and that kind of thing, as opposed to when a person says, just trust me. I mean, that's where we get more of the bitachon. But when we look at things universally, we have to understand, does he have this all under control that either causes or allows? Emunah is more about, you know, causing and allowing. That's what you're really looking at. Now, I think that we're still hung up on the inability, all of us, to understand language and terms. It's not about whether or not something is just universally evil. Evil is a perspective on an action. There are things that may be more universally awful, wrong, agreed to as being abominable or aberrant, okay? As opposed to, you know, because there were some really awful things that were allowed to happen in Israel, but was meant to eventually bring about a good. That doesn't mean that we wouldn't all agree that they were awful things, and Yahweh would agree that they were awful, horrible things. So when you look at things as being universal, it's not about some sort of level of universal evil. Evil is, if it was causing harm, suffering, destruction, ruin, it was evil, okay? Now, whether or not that evil was being used in some way for good or not, there's just some things that are just terrible, abominable things that you would think could never be used for good, but then we find out that something good came out of them. And so it's very hard to say that anything universally can't end up with something good coming out of it. But we can agree that at least most societies, now you go back some generations to the parts of the world, you know, years ago where there were people that thought murder was just fine, rape was just fine, and other things were just normal and fine. So there's no even universality with that. It's cultural, it's by time period, okay? Because you had cultures where going around raping and pillaging was, that's how they lived. That was normal. That was appropriate. That's what happened. And if you got killed and raped, then that was just your turn or whatever. I mean, we would think of this stuff as universally wrong, but they didn't. So it's really societal, timing-wise, and what age you live in and that kind of thing. Okay? But evil, we can all agree that if it's causing harm, ruin, suffering, pain, destruction, it's evil. Okay. Now, whether or not that evil bears something good out of it or not has to play out. Okay. It has to play out. Okay. Now, when you ask, there's one more thing. When you ask about things like the school shootings and other things like that, the emunah that we have out of those things is that Yahweh, and this is hard if you came out of Christianity sometimes, Yahweh is very hands off, much more than you think. Okay. And he's hands-on probably more than you think, too. But I mean, but not in ways that you're thinking. But he's very hands-off. He's got to allow us to blow ourselves up. That's what he said in Scripture. He's going to allow us to prove to ourselves that we can't do this without him. And so he generally keeps his hands out and just does enough that you know he's there so that you can develop your relationship and trust him. But he's told us that he's going to allow this to get so bad that if Yeshua didn't show up, it would all be over. Everybody would be dead. And so it's when we see things like the school shootings, we see things like the murder of all these babies with all the abortions, we see all these other horrible things. He's allowing all this stuff to happen so that we can see what we're capable of outside of him. Because with him, none of that stuff happens. Okay? And so he's making a case. I think it's going to be coming down to almost this idea of like when the end comes, You know, Yeshua's going to show up, and man is going to be like, hey, you know, if you just left us alone, we had this figured out. We were going to figure it out. He's going to say, excuse me, let me play the videotape. This is your life without me, the frying pan and the egg or whatever, right? This is your mind on drugs, right? Okay, this is you, and then this is life with me. Now I'm here. I'm going to show you what that is. But you already proved that life without me leads to destruction of the whole planet. And I let that happen, is what he's going to say. I let you, but you did it. I didn't get in the way. I didn't interfere. I didn't cause anything to happen. Okay? You guys did this so that there's no argument that you can't do this. Because man's ego and pride would be, oh, we had it under control. We were going to figure it out. We didn't need you. And he's going to say, well, let's play the videotape. They don't even use videotape anymore. All right? That used to be like film at 11, you know? Planets destroyed at 10, film at 11. Okay, never mind. Listen, you'll figure it out. Okay. You know, the world ends at 10, film at 11. Do you understand now? Does that make sense? So when you look at these things, you are so horrific and you just can't understand why would these horrible things happen to innocent children, etc. Because it's the world that he's allowing us to live in to prove to ourselves that this is what man is capable of. This is the result you get when men run the show. I'm not saying men versus women. I mean human beings run the show. Okay? When human beings run the show, this is what you get. And at some point, we're going to realize the problem in this country is not guns. It's a lack of vertical morality. Okay? Because way more people have guns than the people that are using them to shoot people. I mean, there's an incredibly small percentage of people using guns to do terrible things. But those that are doing it have a problem with any sense of right and wrong in any kind of vertical way, and no morality, and a lot of them are just not in their sound minds. They're on medication or they're just off their Medicare, whatever it is. And so we look at all these things, and Abba's sitting back there going, I hate to do this, but I can't interfere. I have to let them prove to. It's like sometimes you watch your child doing something dumb, and one parent's about to go over, the other one stops him and says, no. They need to learn that lesson. They need to touch the stove. They'll be okay. They won't die, but they need to learn the lesson. Problem is, we as human beings are absolutely as hard-headed as they come and will not learn lessons. We are dumb as dirt and stubborn as rocks. Okay? And we just will not learn. And the ego is just beyond, out of control. Oh, don't tell me anything. We'll figure this all out. And so he has to allow this to play out. Otherwise, there's no argument for him to win. And he needs to make it as a winning argument because he has to have us see it. We have to watch and look and go, I get it. Not because it was forced and imposed, but because we voluntarily, with our eyes open, look at it and go, yeah, we did that. And no, we do not know what we're doing, and we're ready to finally listen. Okay? All right, Taylor?
I was seeing if... I want to ask it right. Okay, I was seeing, does Yahweh have a limit to the level of greatness a man can achieve? What I mean by that is, I know that you tell us not to settle for less and to reach higher things, but sometimes, even though, like, for me in my life, I'll have things I want to achieve, and then as I'm going along in the process of it, I always hit this stopping point, and then at that moment, I always get this feeling of like, oh, like, I can't let you go there, because then you'll stop praying to me and, you know, asking me for things. I always get that feeling. So I always wondered, What is the point, if that is true, what is the point of, like, greatness that a man can achieve without?
No, I mean, look, I think there's an idea of greatness and there's an idea of maximizing what you can do. And the greatness thing tends to be more that it ends up stroking the ego and the pride and reaching this greatness. And then, of course, if you get to that level of success, quote-unquote greatness, you may not be thinking about him. You're thinking about your own power and strength, and you created all the wealth and those kind of things, all right? I was very successful in a lot of businesses before I ended up in ministry, and he allowed or caused them to not work as well as I would have liked, because otherwise I never would have done this. I would have done one of those that was just making lots of money and doing great, and I would have stayed with it and never thought to do this. And so, yes, he will put roadblocks if it's going to be a challenge in your character development, but you should always be aiming to the maximum highest self. As a father, as a mother, as a sister, as a brother, as an employer, as an employee, as a member of the congregation, as a congregation leadershipper, whatever your role is, you want to become the best you are able to be appropriately at that. Not for pride and ego, but for manifesting what he created you to be, which was to be the most you could be. Okay? So, will he put limits if you're not emotionally ready for something? Look, we see many, many examples of people having a lot of success way quick at a wrong age when they weren't ready, and it destroyed them because they weren't ready for that level of quote-unquote success. But if you build up to it, you should be not only thriving in it, but a blessing to all those around you because of it, okay? In whatever area of your life you become that level of success, others will benefit from it, and won't be about patting yourself on the back and you. So yes, he may put roadblocks in places that you're not ready to go, but it may just be because you're not ready to go, okay? Maybe something you need to wait on.
Okay, got it. Okay? Thank you. And then about the Christian music, I'm just going to be honest, I do still listen to it, but the kind that I do listen to, I was doing what you said not to do and take it out and then swap it and stuff. I pretty much find songs that kind of almost hit it, but not exact. But I was seeing, with music, I had always been the person to, like, if music is played for it, like, it can make me go do things. And I know that can be in a bad way too, but also I've always used it as an encourager and everything. And to be honest, if a song is not good and it does not have a good melody to me, I can't really, like, start thinking about it and meditating on it, and I'm just like, okay. But then I still feel like I have enough power inside of myself to say, or self-control, to not be like, oh my gosh, I want to go back to the Christian church and do these things. So is this like a moment where I just have to, like, suck it up and find something else, or do I have, like, a loophole somewhere?
I appreciate the honesty. Look, I am not here telling you can't listen to anything, okay? I'm telling you that you need to be careful with things because they can do one of those two things. Either start being instructional, or they can bring you back to a place that you really didn't want to be, okay? Now, if that's not the case with you, then that's fine. Look, I don't want to come across wrong here. I have less problem with secular music that you know is secular. You already know what they're saying and everything to some degree than the religious stuff that you can get suckered into being off guard. Like, you got to let your guard down. And next thing you know, you don't realize how much you're talking about some of these doctrinal things that are buried in the songs that are starting to change the way you see things. Now, that's not to say that secular music can't start you leaning in directions either. Okay? But just, I'm not one that's going to make music that bigger thing. I don't play it here as part of what we're presenting. What you do at home is a whole different thing, and that's fine. All right? Listen, I'm a rock and roller guy. I listen to rock and roll stuff, and there's probably nothing good about anything I listen to. Probably not a song. Okay? And I probably don't know the lyrics to most of them either. Okay? But so what you do at home is fine. I'm just explaining to you what we do here and why we do what we do here, because I want to present a very clean message if we can. As clean as I can get it. So that clean meaning that it's not mixed with other stuff. Okay? And so that's why we're doing that. So you don't need a loophole. I mean, you could listen to that. That's fine. Just realize that there are potential, landmines in that field that you're walking in, and just be careful with it, okay? we're not a cult. I'm not going to try to tell you what you can read or listen to or watch or anything else. Okay? I mean, I remember we had a couple in this congregation years ago, many years ago, that boy, if they came to your house, they were looking in your cabinets and on your tables to see what books you had and videotapes and whatever games your kids were playing and everything, because they thought there was a demon under every box, every book, everything. I'm not kidding. They would, you know, they'd be paying attention to every little thing. My kid's playing a game, they're walking around, look behind them. What are you playing over there, you know? And I'm like, you know what? I'm not here for that, okay? You know what you can handle and what you can't handle. Some things are, and they really are, just entertainment. For some people, some things that are entertainment for other people may actually end up teaching and guiding them and end up having them trapped in some place. We're not all the same, okay? We're not all the same. Look, I'm your rabbi. I'm going to confess some things to you. Not really, but I'm just going to let you know something from a history point of view. I was incredibly ADD as a child, so I read very little because I couldn't sit still to read. I could read at a high, high level, but I just didn't sit and read very much, okay? And then I found, from an entertainment point of view, some sports books, which are fine, and then I also found some mythology books that were in the little school library in the elementary school we're in. So I've read every mythology there is. And you know what? I never became a follower of Zeus or Odin or any of that stuff, okay? Now, others can read a book like a Harry Potter and they're all of a sudden wanting to do magic. Others just think it's entertainment and that doesn't affect them at all. You have to know you, okay? I mean, I was born in the era where Dungeons and Dragons got started, okay? I was in high school when it just started. And yes, I played that game. Everybody played that game. And it didn't turn me into witchcraft or warlock or other, I mean, you know. And so, but I knew other people that were affected by it in a different way. And so you kind of have to know yourself to some degree. You know, if certain music affects you and certain other music doesn't, certain books affect you, certain movies affect you, certain, and don't think that there's necessarily just a simple universal brush. Because if we want to use a universal brush, you're not watching or listening to anything. I'm serious. If I'm going to put that universal paintbrush out there, you're going to be left with nothing to listen to and nothing to watch. Okay? Certainly nothing with words in it. You know what's funny? When I was first coming into this walk, I don't mean even the messianic walk, but just even believing in Messiah and Torah and stuff like back in 1987, there were people that only listened to classical music. I said, some of that classical music is darker than anything with lyrics. Oh, but there's no words. There's words. It's meant to evoke certain feelings and emotions. Some of that stuff was actually made to be dark. Okay? And to bring that sort of ominous feel into your life. It doesn't have the lightness that you might want. So I'm not even, you can't even just go to stuff that doesn't have lyrics and go to instrumentals, because some of that has got its own feel to it. Okay? So let's just keep in mind that I like that Taylor brought it up, because this is something you're going to have to deal with on your individual, personal level. And please don't judge anybody else that seems to be able to handle stuff you can't handle. I'm not saying that that's good that they can handle it and bad that you can't. I'm just saying is just don't judge them because they seem to be okay with something you're not okay with. I'm specifically talking about not like breaking Torah or anything. I'm talking about these things that are in the quote-unquote entertainment world that you have an issue with that maybe they don't, or they have an issue with and you don't. Now, the thing that you have to be careful with is, are you being honest with yourself? Do you have an issue with it or not? Or are you just justifying your entertainment choices because you like it and you're not realizing how much it's actually affecting you? Just be careful with this stuff, okay? We had a congregation in Knoxville many, many years ago. This is like 1999, 2000, when the Harry Potter books first came out, okay? And half the congregation had a complete and utter meltdown over these books. And I just didn't understand. It's a book. It's got magic and stuff in it. Don't read it. If you read it, don't worry about it. Just don't become a witch. And all of you have children that have tried the spells. They don't work. Your children have all tried them, tried to levitate things or make things explode or whatever they tried to do. They don't work. But I don't want us just jumping at shadows. There is stuff that's dangerous out there, and there's things that you shouldn't be doing, but they're not necessarily always dangerous for everybody. It may be more dangerous for you because of your, you know, susceptibilities in certain areas and weaknesses in certain areas, and somebody else has different weaknesses in different areas. And so let's, you know, don't take this as an endorsement of everything, but it's also, I'm not going to sit here and say you can't do anything. This stuff can be absolutely problematic for you. All of it can. Everything I mentioned can be problematic for you. So you need to be open and honest with yourself about whether or not it is problematic for you. Is that fair? Okay, without me telling you like a list of things you can't do, you know. Okay? I mean, way back when the Avengers movie first came out, I was frustrated because there was half a congregation that I couldn't even mention I went to the movie because they were going to have a cow. Okay, look, I grew up on all those comic books. I wanted to see them finally make it into a movie. Oh, but. No, it's don't but me, okay? You don't want to go, don't go. That's fine. Because I told my wife back when this was all going on, I said, I'm not apologizing for being me anymore. I'm going to be me. And if you like it or don't like it, that's fine. I'm not going to hide and say, you know, do all these things like in secret or something. I mean, it's like dumb. If you're going to make choices, own your choices. Okay? Own your choices. Oh, but people are going to... Don't worry what people do. That's their problem. They shouldn't be judging you anyway. They got their own problems. Some of them are just better at hiding them. Doesn't make them less, though. It's just less public. All right? Okay, good questions. Okay, Ashley?
Yes, I already know the answer to this question, but I wanted
okay,
to ask if you could fine-tune it for me.
I said, okay, then sit down. No, go ahead. I can fine tune it for you.
Thank you. Hasatan, he does a lot of things a lot of people perceive as evil, but they're not evil. He's just a tool. He's bad, but he's not.
Okay, well, see, we're using the terms wrong. Okay? Evil is a perspective on the result. Harm, suffering. So anything Hasatan does that ends up with harm, suffering, pain, destruction, ruin is still evil, okay? The problem is not that. The problem is we're attributing or giving him credit for a lot of things that he had nothing to do with, that we were quite capable of bringing on ourselves, okay? Or the Creator brought it on you. I mean, he brought all this evil all the time on Israel and said, I'm bringing evil on you. He didn't say, I'm going to have Hasatan bring evil on you. I'm going to stop restraining him and Hasatan's going to bring evil on you. He said, I'm going to bring this evil on you. And if you repent, I'll relent of the evil I was bringing on you. And so really our confusion with Hasatan is giving him credit for things that really, you know, he doesn't necessarily have anything to do with. And giving credit to things that he really has something to do with, which is really only working with trying to figure out what you have in you that's weak. And then when he finds it, he's going to keep encouraging you to act poorly in that weak area. But he's not going to put an idea in your head and then you're kind of go off in this path that you didn't really want to do. He's going to try to figure out the things you really do want to do that you shouldn't do and then kind of be whispering like, hey, come on, go ahead, do it, you know? But if you don't really want to do it, you'd be like, no, shut up. But if you're thinking, yeah, that sounds good, that's what he's looking for. But people will say, oh, no, the devil made me do it. No, he can't make you do anything you don't want to do. He can't. Christianity doesn't want to tell you that. Okay?
So with that, then now you just sparked the question then. So how, and it probably doesn't matter, but how do you tell if it's something that Hasatan did or something that Yahweh caused, or not caused in love, something Yahweh brought upon you?
All right. No. That's a good question. It's actually an easy question. Okay? It's Hasatan if it was something that you had in you to do and you made a choice and then maybe Hasatan encouraged you to go in that direction, okay? If it's something that you had never chosen, had never desired, and happened in your life, it either was allowed or caused by the Creator. It either was just random chance and situations that came upon you, time and chance happened to everybody, or he caused it. But it's when you find yourself doing something you shouldn't do that you kind of really want to do, but you know you shouldn't. That's either you or maybe some encouragement from Hasatan, but it's still you. Okay? All right. I use the analogy all the time about, like, for example, with alcohol. All right? I don't have an alcohol thing. If I had a beer tomorrow, I probably wouldn't have another one for a year. I'd never be tempted to have two. It's not because I'm against it. I just don't really have any interest in it. Okay? Every now and then, socially with somebody, they might bring out, and I may just have one. So in a year, maybe two or three at the most. Maybe some years, none. That's just because I never have an interest in it. Not morality or this. I just never had any interest in it. So guess what Hasatan never tempts me to do? Never tempts me to get drunk. I never have any thought about getting drunk. There's nothing in me to want to get drunk. Okay? But if you had that problem and had that propensity, Hasatan could always try to create little situations where you might be tempted to go ahead and get drunk by giving you easy access to your weakness. He could put me in a room full of people with beer everywhere and I won't drink one because I just don't want one. Most of the time, I won't even have one, even if it's just all there and people just passing them around, and because it's nothing that interests me. Now, I've got my own problems that you might not have. I'm just picking one for an example. And so, you know, there's probably a reason why my passwords never work. Because that's an area of frustration I haven't overcome. Now, maybe you never have a problem with your passwords just because it doesn't bother you when you do. So we have to just realize that these things are caused or allowed so we can deal with our weaknesses. But just understand that unless you actually have an area of weakness, then saying that it's Hasatan makes no sense, because Hasatan is only working with your areas of weakness. Okay? All right, Brandy.
Hi. I need you to clarify Luke 3:19, Herodias, when John called him out for taking the lady with the similar, no, Philip, something like that, Philippa?
Right, Philip's wife.
When he was Herodias, he was outside, right? He was part of the nation, didn't understand that she shouldn't have been his wife.
Okay, so there was some adultery stuff going on here.
But he still wasn't Jewish.
Not really understanding the question.
Like, he didn't know that wasn't supposed to be happening. Kind of like if we went to someone and said, hey, you're supposed to wear tzitzit, and they don't understand because they weren't called out.
Oh, no, but remember, right? These were people that were.
So
yes.
He did. Okay, yeah, okay, yeah. Okay.
And so John was picking on the king, or the person. This is not the Roman in charge here. This is now the Herod, the king. Okay, and so we have this, the Jewish king in the area who was really subject under Rome, and John was having a problem with what he was doing.
Okay, but he knew better.
Yeah.
Okay, so comparing that to Paul, when he would talk about, I became as them to bring them, these were people who were potentially called out, but he was practicing some of their traditions that didn't break Torah in order to teach them?
I don't think we really... we're absolutely guessing. I don't think we really know. When Paul says that I became all things to all men to reach the more and those kind of things, I mean, I can guess that it has to do with, like, I do the same thing. I try to, you know, be gentler or stronger or different to adjust to people so that I can be better received. You know, one of the things that we are taught in sales training is matching and mirroring, which means simply that the more that I behave and sound and act like you, the more comfortable you actually are, because the person you like the most in the world is you. So if you're quiet and I'm quiet, you will be more comfortable than if I'm loud and you're quiet. If you're loud and I'm quiet, you're not as comfortable. So if I walked in a room as a sales guy and a guy, as I walk in, the guy goes, hi, how you doing? And I'm like, hey, I'm doing great. How are you? I suppose a guy walk in, hey, what's going on over there? Can I help you? I'm like, yeah, no problem. You know, because now I'm meeting him in that level. Guy doing a lot of hand gestures, I might do a lot of hand gestures. It's just being something that feels comfortable to the other person. So Paul's saying, I did some of the things that made these people comfortable so that they would be able to receive the information without compromising necessarily, without breaking any Torah or anything like that, but just becoming more like them. And, you know, culture-wise, and maybe mannerisms and tonality, so that he could be better received.
Okay.
Okay?
So when you talk about being who you are, when you decide to match that person, it needs to be for a purpose.
Yep.
Versus, I'm going to change who I am because this person in front of me has hurt feelings.
No, you definitely don't want to do it that way. You don't want to change for people for wrong reasons.
Right.
Okay, so it's not changing, by the way. It's adjusting in the situation. All right? So when a person comes back to sit with me in counseling session, and I can see that they're upset and they're being quiet, I'll sit there and just be quiet for a minute, let them get started, or be, you know, or just quietly say, it's okay, you know, take your time. And I'm going to try to match them where they are, and then maybe gradually I'll speed things up a little bit and get a little bit more life in me to help get, so they can match and follow me a little bit. Because once I get to where they are, I can pull them towards where they can wake back up and liven up. But I got to go back. I got to start where they are. Okay? And so I got to gauge them and then meet them there. Okay? So someone walks back into counseling like, hey, Rabbi, hey, what's going on? I'm like, hey, great, what's going on? You know, I'm going to meet them and start where they are until I figure out what they need and where they're going. And then I'll make an adjustment. And it's not manipulation, and it's simply making it comfortable so that we can get to where we need to communicate better. So we're not distracted by how different we are at that moment.
Okay. So my actual question then is, when you're in a situation, or I am in a situation, and the person is a Christian, is it okay to answer them? And I can tell maybe, okay, they're not seeking or they haven't had their bubble popped. Is it okay to answer them as a Christian, knowing that it's not going to affect me in my walk?
No, I'm not going to then change information-wise. Like I said, I'll change some of my tonalities and behavior and speed of moving at and speed I'm talking and those kind of things. But I'm not going to change the information. If someone's a Christian and I'm talking to them, I'm either going to explain to them in the best way I can if I'm going to answer their question, or I may just let them know that, hey, we're just on very different pages and it's not going to go there. I generally don't deal with a lot of back and forth with people that are coming from a Christianity mindset, because they're not going to understand what I'm saying anyway. So I don't usually try to push that direction. I just find ways to get out of the conversation.
Okay.
A lot of you think, oh no, but that was a witnessing. No, that wasn't a witnessing time. Okay? Look, let me encourage all of you. Okay? There's only two things that you should be doing as far as interacting with other people out there that are not necessarily in the body. Number one, okay, when you interact with people, first gauge whether or not their bubbles popped. How do you do that? Well, just find out how happy they are in their walk. If their bubbles popped, they're not happy. They're looking, they're searching, they're frustrated. So when I meet somebody new, and in interacting with them, they ask me, you know, well, what do you do? And I say, well, I'm a messianic rabbi. They go, oh, God, I get all excited about that. I said, okay. And I say, well, you know, and they say, oh, yeah, you know, we're all excited about my Bible. I said, so tell me about your walk. Oh, I'm doing great and blessed, and we have this Bible study on Wednesdays, and we do this other thing. And I'm not going to say a word to disturb that nonsense, because they're not ready for anything. They're happy. They're it's only going to be a fight. It's only going to make them mad at me anyway to tell them anything that's going to disturb their peace, because he has to disturb their peace, not me. So I first try to figure out how happy they are, where they are. Now, occasionally I'll have somebody say, you know, I'm really not very happy and I'm kind of frustrated and this and that. Now, that person may be ready, may not. But at least they have the sort of the sound of somebody that might be ready, okay? Because they're already saying, I'm frustrated, I go to this place, but it's not where I really need to be and I'm kind of confused and this and that. I say, that's okay, maybe you want to check us out. Very little of that's ever borne any fruit, but at least that's somebody that may be willing to check us out, okay? They just may need a different denomination or whatever they're already doing. So I don't know what their level of frustration is. But when they're telling me how great everything is and how much they're walking in favor and all that other stuff, then I'm like, good. I'm happy for you. Okay? What do you want me to do? All right? Now, the second thing would be, if you get one of these people, just enough to plant the seed of where you're coming from so that when eventually their bubble does get popped, they may think to ask you questions then. Just kind of let them, hey, listen, I'm in a different place. I'm kind of doing this Torah Yeshua thing or whatever. And then you planted a seed without explaining too much, without getting into a debate or whatever. Just depending on you have enough relationship with the person where you may be still in touch with them down the road, not a stranger you just met, so that they know when their bubble gets popped, hey, wait a minute, I remember Aunt so-and-so or Uncle so-and-so or somebody's friend, whatever, where they were doing this thing. Maybe I need to call them. All right? That's all I do is those two things. And actually, I do very little of either of those because you guys do most of that. It's my job to teach them after they get brought over here. So he doesn't really put me in a whole lot of places to talk to people. And quite frankly, I am not the person that was ever raised to strike up conversations with people in line at the store to try to witness to them. because 99.999% of them are not going to want to hear what I have to say anyway. Okay? So, you know. All right. So hopefully that answered the question. Brandy, was that good? Okay, good. All right. Deirdre.
Hi, Rabbi. So listening to Taylor and her question reminded me that there was something that I needed to address, and now is just as good a time to do it in terms of media. So I grew up with reading the Chronicles of Narnia. It's not going to surprise anybody in here for them to learn that I could basically quote every line in the book, enjoyed the movies. I had audio dramatizations. I mean, I was obsessed. But the thing about it was that I was taught that it was an allegory. At least the three books of the series were an allegory of creation, of life and death of Messiah, of the end days, quote unquote, as right. C.S. Lewis understood them. Then I got older, and I still loved the series, but I began to be uncomfortable with aspects of it, and especially when I came here, I said, okay, if I can't read this anymore if I'm going to look at it from the Christian point of view, and it killed me. And the funny thing is, Yahweh will still bring quotes in the book to my mind and say, this is why I had you read that, so that you can understand what Rabbi is saying now.
Look, he's going to use whatever you have, okay? I mean, I can take something out of any other experience I had, even the Dungeons and Dragons or whatever. I mean, I'm sure I can take something out that makes sense to now why I understand something else from something I learned, because he's going to use everything that you have, whatever it is that you have. Whatever bad experience, good experience, any experience you had, he can always use that to say, and remember that experience? Now you can understand what this is going on. So that doesn't surprise me at all.
Okay. I know that it's a different... You know, it's based on Christianity's view of what Messiah should be, and I've felt very betrayed by that for a couple years. When Netflix was sort of kicking around the idea of whether or not they want to redo the book series top to bottom, Ricky and I were talking, and the idea was brought up. Well, do I confront it? You know, do I tune in? Do I watch it? Do I reread the books to try to tweak my view of it, or do I just let it die?
That choice is yours.
No, I want to know what to do.
No.
No, I'm a blue. Tell me.
No. No. No, that choice is yours.
I don't like that answer.
If they redo it, though, I promise you it'll be all woke and everything. It'll be all kinds of mess.
I know.
Yeah. There'll be, you know, some of the characters now will be gay and lesbian and all kinds of other things. And, you know, and it'll be all woke stuff. You know. Anyway, that's what they're going to do. They did it with everything else they put out there.
That's fair.
Okay.
Ashley goes, there's your answer.
Look, there was a book series that I read when I was in college and as a teenager in college that they finally started to put out in a miniseries form, and they ruined the entire story. Now, I could have not watched it, like you're saying, that I chose to watch it because I was curious what they would do. And they turned the whole thing into a completely, you know, woke agenda show. And it had almost no resemblance anymore to the books. And I hated it. And my daughter and my son would walk by, why are you yelling at the television? I said, because they're...
Yes.
They're ruining the story.
Yes.
Yes. You know, so I the odds of them making it generally horrifically worse than whatever it was originally is very high. Okay.
That's not even the problem. I mean, it is a problem, but what I mean is, like, would it be, is it breaking Torah to sort of like purify my head? Or do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, look, the question is how much of this is spin and how much of this is what you're really just trying to find ways to justify something? Because when you say, well, I'm trying to purify, well, you know, you can purify your head by just leaving it alone.
That's what I need. Thank you. There's
That's
my
the
answer.
Easiest
Thank
way
you.
To do it. Okay?
Thank you. No, I'm not trying to spin. I really want to know.
No, but look, but the whole thing is that this is a lesson for all of you that people come for counseling. I'm not telling you what to do when you want me to tell you what to do. I can give you some ideas and thoughts of how you can sort of process it, but I'm not going to tell you what to do. You've got to figure that out for yourself. All right? Now, if something's a black and white Torah issue, I can say, yes, no, you cannot be working on Shabbat. You can't. Then I'll tell you that you can't do it. I'm going to tell you that you go right now and quit your job. I'll just tell you need to fix the problem. All right? But you may say, well, tell me what to do. Do I quit the job? No, I'm not telling you what to do. You are put on this planet to make decisions. I'm here to guide you with things that would help you in making the right decision. I'm not here to make your decisions for you, okay? Now, bear in mind, this is something that all of us need to accept. Coming into this walk means that you will absolutely have to give up some things you really enjoyed. And that's hard. And it's, I guess, sad in some ways, but it's true. Some of you know, I mean, absolutely had a thing for bacon or shrimp or something, and you had to give that up. I mean, I've heard stories of people, you don't understand. It was like a, you know, an existential experience when I ate this stuff. I said, okay. But now you can't. And that's, see, but you're going to give up something, okay? Some of you feel that way about grandkids, and now you have people that have cut you off from your grandkids. You got people, your daughters and sons that are not talking to you because you had to. And he's going to see how high a price you're willing to pay. Is there a price too high that you're not willing to pay to put him first? And so he's going to have to do things that mess with the things where your heart is out of balance in. Okay? Otherwise, how can he know that your heart is for him first?
But this is why I really wanted to bring it up, because I want to get, let me put it in my words. There's a character that I really, really enjoy of a show. I really enjoy the show, and he absolutely hates leeks. I want to be that.
Okay.
So that's why I wanted to bring it up, where my heart is. I want to get to that point where I can just look at my little spiritual leaks and go, get
okay,
that away.
Good. Good. Awesome. All right, we're almost to, no, you've already been up here twice. So if anything, I'm going to skip you and go to Isaiah. But let me just go to the live stream if I can for one or two quick ones. And I'm not even sure I'm going to get to Isaiah. It's already 6:30 or almost. So Rob, go ahead real quick.
Okay, Delia Alonzo says, Rabbi Steve, why do you pray for each person who reads Torah on Torah Tuesdays?
Because it kills time. I'm sorry. These kind of things pop in my head all the time. I edit 99% of them, okay? I mean, one-liners, everything you guys say, there's always a one-liner I could throw out, always. All right? All right, so there is a tradition, okay, that it is an honor to come up, and that's what's called an aliyah, to come up to read the Torah, okay? In the synagogues, they have this, the idea of coming up, like let's go up to the mountain, okay? So when people come up to read, because it is an honor and a blessing, we ask a blessing on them for coming up to, because the blessing says that we ask that they would honor, that they bless them for them coming up to honor Yahweh and the Torah. Okay? And so, because there are very few greater honors than to come up and read the word in front of your brothers. Okay. Next question.
Okay. Here's one. There's a couple of people asking similar questions. It says from Allison. It says on Shabbat, if we can come together as one to Yahweh when making love, why can't we come together as one to Yahweh at a wedding / marriage on Shabbat? It says just trying to understand the differences.
Okay. I think the difference should be, I don't want to pick on the person, it should be obvious, which is when we come together on Shabbat, everything is about him. When you get together at a wedding, and I'm not saying this is wrong, it's totally appropriate, everything is about the bride and the groom. Okay? Now, I know it's almost always a religious ceremony, so people say, oh, but it's about him. No, it's not about him. I've performed a lot of weddings, and every wedding had one thing in common. It was about the bride and the groom. And it's supposed to be. And because it is, and by the way, you don't just like in the middle of Shabbat just have a wedding. You have to prepare and it takes hours and the bride's getting dressed and all these other. There's no focusing on Yahweh at that moment. They're focusing on I'm about to get married. And the excitement of that, the nervousness of that, and all the people that are coming and maybe some family and friends haven't seen in a long time. There's so many things that are about that that it doesn't leave that much room for it to be about him. So I think it's wonderful that the wedding is about the bride and the groom because he uses the wedding metaphor all throughout Scripture. But when you're doing a wedding, you're really focusing on the bride and the groom. Shabbat, we're focusing on the father and son. Okay? And so, yes, we're coming together, but for a different reason. And the reasons aren't similar in any way. Okay? Next.
Mark Neal says, Rabbi, can we give our offering and says, can we give our offering and buy items to celebrate the feast on the feast or the holy day? Talking about for tomorrow, since it's only a one-day feast, or must it be done? Must it be done prior?
Okay, I know what he's talking about. I think so. Look, you can use your tithe money to do things that you need for the feast, but that still doesn't mean you can do business and do that purchasing on the feast day. The one exception to the feast day that's different than a normal Shabbat is that you can cook. Okay? So tomorrow, you would be able to cook. Because I know that the Urbana group is planning to do a barbecue. They're going to do burgers and dogs and stuff, and that's totally fine. They just don't want you buying them tomorrow. You should have bought them in advance. Okay? You can cook them tomorrow. Okay? And you can have that as part of your celebrating and eating together and all that kind of thing. Because you can cook and celebrate. It's called a feast. Okay? And so you can feast. And so let's just keep that in mind. Can you add anything else real quick before we kind of, the kids are starting to come down and we're starting to get everybody down here?
No, sir. Most of them are just, no, we're good.
Was yours going to be quick? No. Okay, I didn't think so. At least Isaiah was honest. He was like, no. That's fine. We can talk about it later. All right. Grape Zone 1.